the top players and legends to the very best analysts around the world from wherever the beautiful game is played. This is BTP. Now, we're talking football.
Welcome, everyone, to another episode of Beyond the Pitch. I'm Juan Island. Of course, we're going to be, throughout these next few recordings, keeping it within CONCACAF, but changing a little bit of the context, because with me I have a person that I've really been reading about a lot, that I've been really researching a lot, and of course, I've had a couple of chances to run into him while in Costa Rica. None other than Mr. Juan Carlos Rojas. He's the president of Deportivo Saprissa over in Costa Rica. And Mr. President, thank you for being on the show. And it is a pleasure to have you on. And again, first of all, congratulations on the big win against Santos in the playoffs. Tell us a little bit about what was going on at the Ricardo Saprissa yesterday because of the necessity that Saprissa had in order to win.
Well, hello. Pleasure to be on your show. And indeed, yesterday's match was very important. We are in the playoff round in Costa Rica. We play our current format is a round robin of the top four teams. And the winner of this round robin playoff goes to the final against the winner of the regular season. And if it's the same team, then they're automatically champions. In this tournament, it was Heredia. So, you know, we're trying to win the round robin and get to the final. And it was a big home match yesterday. The atmosphere was very exciting. And we won 4-2 with four beautiful goals from our players. So, you know, it was a key win for us.
Mr. President, I had a quick question about this season for Saprissa. It's been a kind of a weird one, especially knowing what happened last time around. Your sporting director resigns in Pablo Cesar Huanchope. Of course, your coach also resigns at the end of the season. So you have a bunch of new things that are coming along at the beginning of the season, and then to really have a bit of a transition period, a very short transition period, for a team like Saprissa, because of course the demands on them is to consistently win, and there are no questions asked. How has the team been able to not only adapt, but adapt with new players in the process as far as what the team's been looking for?
Yes, that's a good point. You know, first of all, we have two seasons per year, and you know, it's a very short period between the end of the winter, what we call the winter tournament here, and the beginning of the summer tournament. We basically have a couple of weeks, and our coach resigned for health reasons. He'd been the coach for the last 2 years. What we decided to do was to basically promote the assistant coaches, the assistant coaches, head coach. We felt we had a very good coaching staff below Mr. Carlos Watson, and we wanted that continuity. We didn't think that it was appropriate to bring in someone from the outside with such a short period of time for the start of the new season. We also brought some new players, and all of that, you know, was proved to be a little bit difficult. A lot of changes, as you said. We placed second. We had a strong start and a strong finish. In the middle of the third season, you know, we had some bad games, and unfortunately we didn't do well in CONCACAF against America.
You guys always tend to get probably the hardest team, the team that either ends up being a champion or a team that gets to really deep into the tournament. It's not like you end up getting, you know, a team from Central America or a team from the Caribbean or anything like that. You end up getting one of the Mexican teams that either ends up being the champion, in case of America and Pachuca the past couple of years before, but then also you get, you know, one of the top teams, you know, in the region as well. So never an easy draw for you guys.
Yes. I mean, we've had the that luck of the draw. But in the past four CONCACAF League of Champions, we've lost to Mexican teams. When we've played MLS teams, we've been able to beat them a couple of times. But then, you know, we face off against Mexican teams, and when we haven't been able to get through that hurdle, and perhaps, you know, we can dive deeper a bit later in the interview as to the reasons and the competitive factors. But América obviously is a very, very good team, and we had our difficulties playing them, and in big part because of some of the roster changes and the coaching change as well. You know, right now I feel good about how the team is playing and how it dealt with the adversities mid-season. You know, we had our fan base, which is very, very strict, which expects to win every game, every season. You know, during the rough spot, you know, our fans were very angry, and it put a lot of pressure on the team. But I think the reaction was a good reaction from our head coach and from the players, and we're in the thick of things right now.
It's funny because every time I go to Costa Rica, or even if I'm reading news from Costa Rica, I mean, there is a great deal of pressure, not just on, you know, the coach of turn, you know, be it Carlos Watson or whoever's been before, you know, there's a lot of pressure on you because whenever I hear, you know, I'm hearing Yacin Quesada or any of the other journalists in Costa Rica and something's going wrong with Saprissa, the first person to say, no, Juan Carlos Rojas, so, I mean, that's a lot of pressure on you. And even when Juan Chope was the sporting director, or whoever the sporting directors too, I mean, for that matter.
Well, yeah, I guess that's part of the job description as president of the team.
Yeah.
And first of all, you know, I've been head of Saprissa as president for 7 years now. So, you know, it's nothing new. And you kind of get used to dealing with those ups and downs. And obviously, you know, it's impossible to win every season, and you know that you know you're going to lose sometimes. This is football, and you have to get a thick skin if you're going to be involved, especially with a team like Saprissa, which is so you know, there's so much media frenzy around Saprissa, and our fans are so passionate and expect to win all the time. And, you know, I think that's what makes Saprissa great. And so, you know, you just deal with it. And sometimes the media and the fans don't fully understand that we are a very professional organization where, you know, the president is not involved in all of the decisions. That's why we have professionals at, you know, different positions, and and that's why we bring on soccer experts, and you know, and we obviously try to make the best decisions that we think, you know, that we think are going to help us improve and get the trophy. I think we have learned, and I have learned a lot in these past 7 years, and I feel a lot more mature and with a lot more experience to make the tough decisions with a level head.
That's interesting you say that, knowing your background, being a businessman with a lot of experience in business, both domestically and internationally. It's interesting that you say, well, I've pretty much grown into my job. I've matured into this job. Tell me how it was at first that you had that, I guess, for lack of a better term, immaturity as an administrator, but you end up acquiring that maturity as the years go by. Tell me how it was getting into, because it wasn't a very easy process. It was a popular one at that, because you replaced a group that was led by Jorge Vergara that ended up leaving. Your group ends up coming in and getting Saprissa. And of course, there's lots of bumps and bruises along the way. But tell me how those first few months, days, even a couple of years were for you as you know, the spearhead of this project.
Yeah, well, that was very, very interesting. I mean, it was a huge change, first of all, from a personal standpoint, because I'd always been a very private person, and suddenly you're thrown into the spotlight, and that was quite a change. And when we came in, we analyzed Saprissa and what we wanted to do with it. It was a long period of analysis and due diligence, more than 6 months. So we had the time to through in terms of what we wanted to do strategically, and we laid out a 10-year plan, which transcended the sports side. I mean, it had to do with infrastructure. It had to do with the business aspect. It had to do with social responsibility aspect as well, with communication with the fans. So that was our strategic plan. And once we got in, that reality hits you in the sense that it was more difficult than what we expected. Once in the closet, and what we had to deal with from a business and financial perspective. And we also spent 6 tournaments that we didn't win a championship. So the pressure mounted and mounted, and that pressure kind of gets to you in the sense, and the board in the sense of start making more drastic decisions to try to win. And it's not easy to make medium to long-term decisions that are perhaps the wisest business decisions with all that pressure. So I think that's the difference between us now as a group and perhaps when we got in. I feel that we can, we've gone through those very tough moments, and we've also learned from some of the mistakes that clearly we have made. But today I feel very at ease in terms of knowing what the key success levers are in order to have a winning project for the not only on a per season basis but on a long-term basis. And I think that the fundamentals and the pillars of Saprissa to be an institution that can continually compete at the highest level, those things are there. And the best, I'm convinced, is yet to come for us.
Was there a moment ever when you took over that you just said, "Oh my God, what did I get myself into?" Knowing the, I mean, obviously the importance of Saprissa, but also the emotional investment of many fans. Was there a moment where you said, "Oh my God, what was I thinking getting into this?" But at the same time, you probably had another moment and said, "You know what? All that was worth it."
Yeah, I mean, there are tough moments. I mean, I remember a couple of losses, especially in our second season. We lost the semifinals against one of the non-traditional teams, and I was in the stadium, and the fans were really, really angry and shouting, and it was a bad feeling. So now I think that emotional roller coaster, we can I can deal with that in a better way. And of course, ultimately, when we're champions, when we're celebrating, and we when you see the fans that are so happy and proud of the team, I mean, it certainly makes it all worthwhile. And to be honest, obviously it's impossible to win every season, every tournament, or every game. We'll try to win most, but what also makes me very, very proud is having our fans feel good about their institution, feel good about Saprissa, regardless of the final result. I mean, that they can feel proud of being a Saprissa fan, knowing that the institution conducts itself in a correct manner, and that we will try to win, but without sacrificing our core values. And that for us is very important.
It's interesting you say that, because of all the other social, all the social endeavors that Saprissa's really taken on, you know, the school, all the works that you're doing within Divas and even outside of that neighborhood and within Costa Rica itself, and what you're doing, that seems to be part of the values that you've looked to try and exemplify, not just by saying them out loud in a press conference, but also by actions and having, you know, kids graduating. It was impressive to see that happen, to be there when the same day where a bunch of your football players were in school and they had just graduated, you know, secondary school. And to me, that was impressive on your end as well.
Yes, and I'm glad, you know, I'm glad you mentioned that, because obviously, you know, what gets the press is the first team's results. Mm-hmm. And usually some of these things, you know, are not in the forefront of the fans' attention or the media attention. But for us, they are key. And to be honest, you know, an institution like Saprissa that has so much impact in our country, you know, we felt, and that was one of the reasons why we decided to go ahead with this investment a few years back, knowing that Saprissa's impact on our society was so big that if we did things right, not only with programs like the Saprissa Foundation or the school that we had, but also in the way that we conduct ourselves and in the way that we project, how we do things and how our players do things on and off the field and how our coaches do things on and off the field, that will ultimately have some impact in our society. And I don't know if it sounds corny, but it's the truth. And mm-hmm. and for us, we do place a lot of, a lot of attention to those things. And, you know, I'll give you an example. When we got in, we saw that our first team players, less than half had graduated from high school. And we saw that, you know, of our minor division players, you know, most of them don't get to be professional players, but they're putting all the eggs in that basket. And then the ones that don't get to be professional players, are not getting the education that they require, because, that's secondary to football. So we decided to change those things. Right now, you know, if someone's in our minor league system, they are required to graduate, and we mm-hmm. have an on-site school where we provide education and the high school degree. And for our first team players, we have scholarship programs, and we, you know, we promote all those things, and we're very proud of that.
That's interesting to say. Do any other clubs, are there clubs following that example? Are you starting to see clubs, like Herediano or Liga or any of the other clubs, you know, none specifically, but are there some that are looking to do that? Or is it just right now that there's a lot of financial burdens that really don't allow them to?
I would say that there aren't that many examples, unfortunately. And I think that the financial burden, the short-term priorities versus the long-term vision, sometimes hinder the ability of these clubs to plan out, you know, those types of things. You have to make a conscious choice that this is part of your strategy, because if not, you know, you'll say, you know, those extra $100,000 a year that X thing will cost me for education or for whatever else, you know, I could get a player for that, a very good player for that. So usually the incentives for management and for the board of directors is to win. There's so much incentives from a fan and media standpoint that you see all of the resources or most of the resources going then into first team salaries. And what we try to do is first of all grow financially so that we can fulfill all of our plans and be very conscious that we want to win, we want to be very competitive, but that we also have a medium to long-term plan that we're going to be disciplined about fulfilling, because it's part of making Saprissa, you know, the largest and most respected football institution in Central America. And that's our goal. And we want Saprissa fans to be proud, and we want non-Saprissa fans to perhaps say, you know, we don't like Saprissa, we want them to lose, but we respect them, you know, and that's part of what we're trying to accomplish.
With all of that, of course, the message must have changed, and that must have rubbed fans the wrong way to a certain extent, obviously, where, I don't know, people must have taken it from that you were a fan, but you're trying to change the fandom, I guess. And I think there was a phrase that you said a few years ago, and correct me if I'm wrong, and I'm paraphrasing at the same time, is like, we can't look at this as like a club. We have to look at it from a corporate perspective. And maybe people didn't understand, and now they're finally understanding because of the pillars that you've been able to create within the club, what you actually meant.
I think that there's a part of the fan base, you know, the fanatics, the hardcore fans that, you know, you're probably never going to change, and all they want is results, and you know, that's fine, and we are also trying to get results, and we'll give them results, on the field results, but I feel very good that in another part of the fan base, there has been a change. And they have understood, and you know, and they feel good about being part of Saprissa and being a follower of Saprissa, and you know, you have to feel proud of the institution, not only for the results on the field, but for everything else. And you know, for example, as a parent, and you want your son or daughter to be a follower of the team. You know, you want that team to be projecting the correct values, and you want the head coach to be projecting those core values that I'm mentioning. And you want also to grow an institution that can be a professional institution, so that
yes,
we can invest in infrastructure, we can invest in a better stadium, a better stadium experience for our fans, and we can invest more in infrastructure for our minor leagues, all of that. So, you know, it's not easy to balance that, and that's part of what I was saying about being more mature in the decision making process and more disciplined as well. And I think today that as a board of directors, you know, our board is very disciplined, and we're very clear about what we want accomplished. And you know, two or three straight losses and fan pressure is not going to deter us from you know, from that vision.
Yeah.
So you know, you'll see that at least we'll try not to get swayed or pulled in by, you know, the craziness sometimes of the fans and media of a bad result. And, you know, we'll try to have a very stable, emotionally stable institution and financially stable and strategically stable. We want to transcend in that sense from a club to a real institution that, you know, that is much more than just our first division team.
I'm here with Juan Carlos Rojas. He's the president of Deportivo Saprissa in Costa Rica. President, every time you say something, there is always some kind of repercussion. Whether we follow each other on Twitter, and I see sometimes your statements and what you say, and they, you know, you get a lot of people say, "Hey, you're right." There's some people that say, "What are you talking about?" And there's people that, well, you know, that's the rest. How have you seen your position as president of one of the two biggest clubs in Costa Rica, probably based on titles and based on history, the biggest club in Costa Rica? How have you seen that role as president of this club? And every time I say something, whether it's football related, whether it's structure related, whether it's social, economical, or even governmentally related, how do you see that your voice has evolved based on this position, but also based on this position, you've had to evolve, you know, into more than just a president? You become now a national figure of sorts. You're no longer just the president of a football club alone.
Yeah, first of all, I mean, being Saprissa here in Costa Rica is just so big from an attention standpoint that, you know, the president of Saprissa automatically captures a lot of attention. At the beginning, you know, the first few years, I was, you know, I was in the radio or TV in interviews, doing interviews and press conferences almost every other day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, it's part of the learning process. Today, I'm much more reserved in terms of being like in the news or in the radio interviews. I do like to use my Twitter account, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm, I took a step back. I think it was, you know, the president of any institution, of any football club, doesn't have to be talking about every day being interviewed about, you know, the ticket prices for the following game, or why this player missed, you know, a penalty kick and things like that. That's why we have professionals. That's why we have a big infrastructure of people and the sports director and things like that. So, mm-hmm. So I think that my interventions and the interventions of the president of a team should be more strategic. First of all,
I would ask that. I ask that because a lot of times, there was a lot of controversy because you say, well, the referee is this, the referee is that. And justifiably or unjustifiably, I mean, depending on the context, people would say, oh, look what he just said. You know, he's doing this. Oh, he's conditioning that. Oh, you see, now he's trying to do it. So it's like, you can't win.
Yeah. And the second thing, I mean, so from a media standpoint, I've kind of taken a step back because I don't, you know, the president doesn't need to be in the news every day. That's why the head coach will speak, the sports director, etc. In my, you know, when I want to convey a message, I do have my personal Twitter account, and I will use that for, you know, for different purposes and to give different opinions. Sometimes I will convey an opinion like a fan would. I mean, I'm also a fan, and I also get ecstatic if we have a great game, like I thought yesterday's game was, with some exceptional goals, and what Mariano Torres did yesterday is extraordinary. I think.
Don't tell me you're asking him to be on the national team too. You got on that bandwagon too.
So you know, it's fun also to be able to comment as a fan, and I think fans like that. I mean, they also need to know that I'm very passionate about our team winning, which I am. And obviously I have to be careful. I mean, I can't behave like a fan on every level. But sometimes I will give my opinion in that sense. And sometimes strategically, if I think that my intervention will place attention on something, then I'll also say something. Like, for example, with the referees, I mean, we've been very, very cautious, and we've been very reserved in speaking about the refs, and I think it was 2 years ago we said, you know what, we're not going to talk about the refs, and we gave that direction to our coach and to our players, and we've kind of stuck to that, but sometimes it gets to a point where I say, you know, strategically, I am going to mention it, and I know that fans, especially of other teams, are going to come out and screaming, but I think at that point it's the right thing to do, mm-hmm. to mention it. I think in a professional manner, yeah, I mean, obviously there's that platform, and I will try to be professional, and I'll try to be responsible about those opinions, knowing that I'm not only speaking as mm-hmm. as Juan Carlos Rojas, but also as the president of Saprissa.
President, overall, the Costa Rican League, what does it need to get that injection or that jump start to be able to compete or increase the level of competition there in order to take that next step? And what I mean by the next step is to become one of the powers in Central America that can really start to cause a big menace and a big complication, become part of the conversation of at the regional level, where you can start to say, hey, you know what, Saprissa, you know, Liga, Herediano, X, Y, and Z in Costa Rica. Oh, you know what? If, you know, America, Chivas, those types of teams don't watch out, Tigres, there's a good chance that a Costa Rican team could come back and win for the first time since 2005.
Yeah, I mean, that's, you know, that's a tough question. That's $10 million question. And there are many aspects to that. First of all, the financial difference and the market difference mm-hmm. between Costa Rica and Mexico and the U.S., I mean, it's just enormous, obviously.
Yeah, of course, yes.
And, you know, to be honest, it's not going to get smaller. The Liga MX is growing a lot. And they're professionalized a lot, and they're doing very well. And MLS is also growing up, so it's only gonna get bigger, more professional, and more competitive. So we're up against two monsters in CONCACAF, which are MLS and Liga MX, in two huge TV markets with huge populations. You know, 330 million and 120 million versus 5 million. Our budgets, the top, I estimate that the top Liga MX teams probably have player budgets that are 20 times the Saprissa budget. It's hard to compete. It's impossible to compete on a financial level. So how do we compete? First of all, I do think that our local tournament needs to improve. And, how is very difficult, because there are some structural problems. And the biggest structural problem is that Saprissa and Alajuela, between us two teams, we have, almost 90% of the fans. So that means that the other nine teams have, amongst all of them, less than 10% of the fans. And obviously the fan base is key to producing, to getting sponsors, mm-hmm. To get, TV money, etc. So there's a structural problem there. And obviously there are ways to at least improve that, and I think we are discussing internally at the federation level and at the league level ways to improve our tournament and have the tournament be more competitive and have the infrastructure be better, the fields be better. So that's one part. On the other part, we also need to continue growing financially, not to be on par with the U.S. or Mexico, but to be able to hold on to our players, say, a year more or 2 years more. Because today the salary differences are so big that the first chance that one of our players gets to go to the international, to the international football, they'll want to leave. Because the salaries difference is very big. If we can continue to grow financially, then we can provide better salaries and maybe hold on to these players longer and have a team that is more robust and established to go play CONCACAF. I'll give you an example.
Yeah.
In the past 18 months, we have sold 7 players to MLS. You know, and many of these players are on the national team, and they're very good players. I mean, how would we have fared in this CONCACAF Champions League if we had held on to those 7 players, for example?
And once you start going down those names like David Guzman, Francisco Calvo, Carvajal, you can even add him to the list as he went to Spain.
Machado, remember?
Machado, of course.
Yeah, so that's a reality. So we need to improve as a league so that the league is stronger financially and that we can also grow so we can have better salaries and hold on a bit longer to our players. I mean, that's the big equalizer for Costa Rica is talent.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think we have great talent, and you can see that on a national team basis. I mean, on the national team basis, I think that we are on par with Mexico or the U.S., or you can say that we're higher than the U.S., you know, as per the latest results. So when you get our best players and put them on the field against the best players of U.S. or Mexico, I mean, I think we have no problem competing. But on a club level, you know, those best players are not in our league. You know, they're playing internationally. So we need to continue to develop the talent that we're developing, hopefully improve in that development,
with
better infrastructure, bringing on better methodologies, and then hold on to those players a bit longer. And that's part of the recipe as to how we can, given the huge financial gap, at least compete in better terms in CONCACAF.
How much of a boost has the national team given the domestic league, or really not much, knowing how successful Costa Rica was obviously in the 2014 World Cup during this World Cup qualifying cycle and everything that individual players have been able to do for themselves, you know, at the respective clubs, starting from Keylor Navas and going all the way down. How has that impact helped, or maybe, you know, not even been felt in Costa Rica from a club level?
Well, in a direct manner, I would say that not that much. But indirectly, I think that it has helped us professionalize at the federation level, at the management level, knowing, you know, what we did in Brazil and the monies that came into the federation. And I think that going into these two World Cups, you know, Brazil and Russia, and having qualified, and relatively those that money that goes into the federation is a lot of money for a small country like us. So I think that has helped strengthen the federation and the infrastructure at the federation level. And I feel very good that the organization of football is much better than it was, say, when we got in 7 years ago. At the club level, you know, obviously there's more attention on Costa Rica, and I think we've been able to transfer more players internationally, which has a direct impact, but I don't think that there is, for example, an impact on ticketing revenues or things like that. And even sponsorships, sometimes we compete against the national team. So this is a tough year for teams because the big sponsors are focused on the national team. So, you know, it's not sometimes, you know, these huge successes by the national team, it doesn't have a direct correlation with the successes of the teams.
What are your expectations of the national team as a fan, obviously?
Well, to be honest, they are higher than my expectations were going into Brazil.
that's pretty high. I don't know. I really don't know how to take that because you talked to many in Costa Rica in November, December of 2013, and they're like, no, well, we're going to go, or, you know, we'll be there for a couple of matches and that's it. I mean, that really doesn't say too much, but, you know.
I know. It was, that's not saying much. We have a tough group. The three other teams in our group are very, very strong teams. So we're going to have to be at our best. What I do think is that we have very experienced players who probably play their best, and that has been a staple of Costa Rican soccer, you know, when we're at the highest stage. So I'm hopeful that we will have a very good presentation in terms of what Costa Rican football is. And we have very talented players. We have a very disciplined coach in terms of tactical positioning. And, hopefully we'll have a good World Cup. But we also have to be clear that competition is very, very good in our group. So we'll see what happens.
I forgot to ask you this question. It's going back to the beginning. And I told you about, you know, moments that you were like, what the hell am I doing here? What was that moment? And I'll take a shot at one, and you correct me if I'm wrong. Probably one of the sweetest moments for you as president of Saprissa was being able to get that 30th title. And of course, you get it against Liga of all teams. Was that, or am I a little bit off base? Or is it amongst one of the best?
I would say that it's definitely number one. And it's definitely number one because there was so much at stake in that final. And a lot of things converged. First of all, it had been 3 years since we'd come into Saprissa, and we hadn't been able to win the championship. So that was a huge gorilla in our backs that we had, and there was a lot of pressure for us to be champions. And in the meantime, our fiercest rival, Alajuela, they had won several championships, and they had tied us with 29 championships each. And we both got to the finals. It was our first final during our administration up to that point. And we were playing Alajuela with Oscar Ramirez, the current national team coach, as the Alajuela coach. Mm-hmm. And whoever won that final would have the bragging rights to the 30th title, which also was at the time the first team in CONCACAF to get to 30. So it was very symbolic. And we just couldn't let La Liga overtake us in that. So, in the first game, the away game at Alajuela, it was a 0-0 draw. And then our home game at Saprissa, with a torrential downpour on a Saturday night, we were able to win 1-0. And, it was amazing. And, the fans stormed the field, and you could see fans kissing the field and hugging and chanting, and the music playing, "We are the champions." I mean, it was unforgettable, and it represented a lot for us at that point, and it was very, very emotional.
That was one of the last times that you guys played on the turf, correct? Because it switched to grass just about a year and a half ago or something like that.
We switched to grass in 2016. We've been 2 years with grass. Yeah.
Yeah, that's that was an emotional match, and it's impressive to see how the team has been able to really, be righted as far as, titles and mindset and social responsibility and everything. President, it's been a pleasure to have you here on Beyond the Pitch. I wish I could talk longer, but I know you know, there's other things you have to do. You do have a life and you do have things that you have to tend to. I mean, you still have things to tend outside of Saprissa, right? You do still tend to your businesses and the other commitments you have, or is it just 100% Saprissa?
Well, you know, it's funny. I do tend to other things, but when we got into this and, you know, we put together the investor group in what we call Horizonte Morado.
Yeah.
And we, you know, we said, well, you know, someone needs to be the president and the face of the investor group. And, you know, they all said, well, Juan Carlos, you know, you've been the one that has been analyzing this deal with your heart and mind into it. And you've, you know, come to analyze and understand football. And, you know, I think you should be the one. And I'm like, well, I'd be honored and glad to.
And so you in other words, you were volunteered.
Well, you know, we it's funny because we analyzed the deal for 6 months and negotiated with Jorge Vergara and all that, but we never really got into saying, okay, who's going to be the president, and also, you know, what the presidency entails and in terms of timing and all of that. And of course, Jorge Vergara's presidency was very detached. I mean, he was obviously in Mexico. So Saprissa had kind of a void for a few years in terms of having an accessible president to the media and the fans and all of that. So, you know, we maybe a couple of weeks before the deal, that's when we got together and said, okay, well, you know, we need to decide who's going to be president. And, you know, I had been leading the analysis and the negotiation process and all of that. So I was honored that they asked me to do that. And I thought that, you know, I could dedicate maybe 50% of my time to that. And, you know, a week or 2 weeks into the Saprissa era, with the new Saprissa era, I quickly realized that it was not going to be 50%, that it was maybe going to be 150%. There was just so much to do. And, you know, in my mind going, you know, 200 miles per hour in terms of wanting to do things. And it was a huge undertaking.
Yeah.
So for the first few years, I was 100%. As president and kind of executive president. For the past couple of years, you know, we've now been able to consolidate a very, very strong and professional management team in every area. So I've been more, my role now, I'd say maybe I dedicate a third of my time to the presidency, especially in dealing with you know, with the league issues, federation issues, obviously some media issues, participating in some of the committees that we have, and obviously board meetings and things like that. I was the one kind of leading the strategic vision of Saprissa, and I like to be very involved in those ideas and things like that. But thankfully, we have a very good people and a very good team implementing and running the day-to-day.
It's interesting you mentioned that, because how do you see Costa Rican football now? Do you see it, I mean, and I'm talking about Costa Rican football now compared to 2015, after everything that occurred during the FIFA gate crisis. And of course, Costa Rica is one of those countries that was just absolutely the day of. And I remember speaking to many Costa Rica colleagues, and they were just in utter shock of what just occurred because of just the suddenness of everything.
I would say that we came out stronger. I mean, ultimately, it was a big shock and it was a big blow to us. And I think our reputation, and seeing Eduardo Lee, you know, going through that. And you know, it was very disappointed. But I think that also forced us to to enforce the federation to be a lot stricter about about transparency issues and internal controls and things like that. And I would say that the federation today is probably one of the best run in CONCACAF, and I would say that CONCACAF would agree as well. And thankfully, we've implemented a lot of things, and we've been used as example. For example, one of those examples is the club license, which we were one of the pilot projects for all of the Americas in terms of implementing the club licensing structure 3 years ago. So, I feel good about the direction that we're going. I think Costa Rica is blessed with a strong talent basis for whatever reasons. And what I think where we do need to improve a lot and to restructure some things is at the league level and at the club level. And we're doing our best to professionalize Saprissa. I think we, I'm very, very excited and proud in terms of where we are today. But I see other clubs and their situation, and it's tough to foresee how those other clubs can grow and become a lot stronger with the current structure. And that's where we need to put our heads together and be strategic about it and stop thinking about, only 1 or 2 year term and think about, the next 5 to 10 years and where we want to be.
It sounds like a solid plan to me. I mean, we'll see how it plays out. Of course, everything looks good on paper, but as soon as you start putting into practice, there's all of a sudden, little hitches and glitches that occur, but of course, yeah, that's what you're there for.
And what's tough about football is that it's very political as well. I mean, these are political structures. I mean, the federation, football federation in our countries are political structures, and the league structure is also a political structure. And many of the teams, the club association structure are also political structures. So, football can be big business if it's thought as from a strategic point of view. But you're trying to mix those political structures, which have more of a short-term bias and short-term incentives versus really professionalizing the whole ecosystem, which I think requires a longer-term view. So I think that's one of the big challenges.
Juan Carlos Rojas, it is a pleasure to have you on Beyond the Pitch. Thank you once again, and I appreciate it. And hopefully, I get to be back in Costa Rica. I was there like 5 times just in 1 year last year. So I'm pretty much, people start recognizing me. Oh, you're back. Okay, cool. So I'm looking forward to being back there once again. As I really enjoyed being in your country and really enjoyed, just being within the football landscape over there. So best of luck to you, best of luck to Saprissa, and best of luck to Costa Rican football and the national team as well.
Well, thank you very much. We're always very happy to have you here in Costa Rica and at the Saprissa Stadium. And I'm also available whenever you want to have another interview.
Sounds good. And you know what? Well, next time we do it, I'll do it with some of the coffee, you work with. Some of that Brit coffee that everybody, when I go down to Costa Rica, hey, can you bring some of that Brit? And so I'm like, yeah, sure, why not? So like I have a case just coffee and stuff like that that I bring back to the States.
Best coffee in the world.
All right. I don't know, man. The Colombian side of me saying, oh, I think we got to have a debate on that one. But
I know. It's also good coffee.
All right, man. Thank you very much.
All right.